I'm certainly very impressed and very pleased to see that so many of you are coming for these evening kirtans. I personally have had some amazing experiences in being involved in kirtan. In Bombay, we have a very big Janmashtami festival. We have a 1 week long festival, and of that festival, 3 days are very intense. 3 days, the crowds are very large. The police estimate that somewhere between 700,000 to 800,000 people come. And on Janmashtami night, which the Vaishnavas celebrate, there are different dates. The Smarta Brahmanas, their calculation of the timing is, it puts Janmashtami a day earlier. But there are more Vaishnavas in Bombay, so we have to keep the deity doors open till often 3:30 in the morning. We've tried to close the doors at 2, and the crowd just about broke the main temple doors down because they had been waiting in line for 3-4 hours, and they wanted darshan of Radharas Bihari. So one particular Janmashtami festival, we had the evening Abhishek, the midnight Abhishek, and it's always, of course, the highlight of the evening. And there's a constant crowd in the temple. The traffic control means the volunteers keep the traffic moving. People, they wait in line for a long time, many hours. Then they get in front of the deities. They're there for about 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and then they have to leave the temple room. There's more people that are constantly coming. But when it gets to midnight, we stop the flow. And whoever happens to be in the temple room is there for the Abhishek. But we have to get people to sit down. Generally when there's Abhishek, you stand up. But we have to get people to sit down, because if we don't, they'll crush one another against the front railing of the deity area, the deity doors and whatever. So there's a marble railing against around all the altars. So we get everybody to sit down, and usually on Janmashtami, hanging off the balconies and in every little corner, there's the darshan mandap. And then down below in the courtyard, there's the Pravesh Mandap. So the whole thing is packed. And usually there are anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people in the temple room at that time. So this one year I remember specifically, the one of the sweetest singers. Now, here in Zagreb, in Croatia, you have some very good singers, And in Ljubljana also, they have some nice singers there. I went to some nice bhajans where Sandy Pani Muni, he was singing.
Huh?
Oh, he's from Zagreb. Okay. Everything good is from Zagreb. You export all over the world. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj has got his best Sankirtan men from Croatia. So, anyway, this boy, some of the singers there are, you know, they've been doing this for many lifetimes. They're so sweet. And they know how to do kirtan so nicely. They chant all day long. And this one particular devotee, he cooks just like Radharani, and he sings like a Gandharva. And I think he has one cassette out or something. Nobody's really taken the trouble. Ram Bhadra in New York now, I think, is recording him. But his name is Srikanta. And so he was singing the bhajan on that evening. And everybody in the temple room got into... Somehow things just seemed to fall into place. All the timing was so perfect. And the Abhishek was starting, and Srikant was leading with a nice microphone and big speakers in the temple room, and he was singing at his very sweetest, and all 2,000 people started to chant the Maha Mantra following him, and it was incredible. The vibration was so powerful. I was helping with the Abhishek, and I was chanting. I was in so much bliss, and it seemed like the marble walls of the temple were shaking, vibrating with the sound. So there's nothing sweeter in this world than to sit together with a group of sincere Vaishnavas and chant the holy names of the Lord. Going to a Rolling Stones concert is nothing. Mick Jagger looks like an old man, a haggard old man. And he's lost his voice, and, you know. But it really is sublime, and of course, you know, you have a lot of nice devotees here in this room. The room is nice size, because when the room is a little smaller, then the energy stays in the room, and you can just melt away. You can, you know, float off into the sky practically just by chanting. But I have experienced it. We're going to build a temple in Mayapur where you're all invited to come. The temple is already built. It's just time is separating. Time and money. I'm not joking. And there will be 4 kirtan halls. There'll be 4 deities, each facing, you know, a different direction. And there'll be 4 kirtan halls. Each kirtan hall will hold about 9,500 people. So we're going to have some great kirtans in this new temple. It's going to be sweet. So you should practice up now. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo. And these varieties are creations of the material nature. They arise from different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desires to live in this body or that body. When he is put into different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. His material happiness and distress are due to his body and not to himself as he is. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is his real state. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, he is in the material world. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing. The spiritual world is pure. But in the material world, everyone is struggling hard to acquire different kinds of pleasures for the body. It might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. The senses are instruments for gratifying desire. Now, the sum total, body and instrument senses, are offered by material nature, and as will be clear in the next verse, the living entity is blessed or damned with circumstances according to his past desire and activity. According to one's desires and activities, material nature places one in various residential quarters. The being himself is the cause of his attaining such residential quarters and his attendant enjoyment or suffering. Once placed in a particular kind of body, he comes under the control of nature, because the body, being matter, acts according to the laws of nature. At that time, the living entity has no power to change that law. Suppose an entity is put into the body of a dog. As soon as he is put into the body of a dog, he must act like a dog. He cannot act otherwise. If the living entity is put into the body of a dog, then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. If the living entity is put into the body of a hog, then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. Similarly, if the living entity is put into the body of a demigod, he must act according to his body. This is the law of nature. But in all circumstances, the super soul is with the individual soul. That is explained in the Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.1, as follows. Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakayaha. The Supreme Lord is so kind upon the living entity that he always accompanies the individual soul and in all circumstances is present as the Supersoul or Paramatma. Kaya karna kartrite hetu prakritir uchite purusha sukha dukhanam voktrite hetu uchite. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. So there are two distinct energies acting. There's material energy and there's the spirit soul. Krishna describes Bhumirapo nalo vayu aham ahankar. Umira po nalo vayu kamano buddhire vacha hankara ityame binna prakritirashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these eight make up my external material energy. And then he says, besides these eight, aparyasi tas tvanyam prakritam didi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yuyedam dayate jagat. There's the jiva soul, and he's distinct from the material energy, but by his own choice, he's now struggling hard with the six senses, including the mind. So, the same theme, we are inviting our suffering, we are creating our own suffering by our false identification. It seems strange, but if you delve into or look into philosophy, it's true. If you just, in terms of casual talk, no one would think that, you know, we always blame God or somebody else for our problems. We never take responsibility for our own problems. There's always somebody else is the reason. But one thing that counselors and psychologists, they know is important, is to help a suffering person or a patient to accept his own problems, to accept that the problems are his. A counselor, especially, one lesson that a counselor learns is it's who owns the problem. If a counselor tries to guide someone by making all the decisions for that person, then the counselor will take ownership of the problem, and he'll take all the stress and all the anxiety, and he'll destroy himself thinking, how many people's problems can you take into your own life? So a counselor has to help someone recognize that it is your problem and I'm here to help you solve your problem. I can't solve your problem for you. You have to take responsibility. I can help you and guide you. I can be a sounding board. I don't know how a sounding board. I can be someone who you can bounce ideas off of, like a handball board or something. You can come up with solutions, and I can repeat them back to you. This is often a very good way of counseling people, is to, when they speak, this is their problem, so you repeat it back to them and let them hear it, and then they'll be able to go deeper and deeper into their own situation, and it becomes a revelation. They discover themselves. They discover their own problem. Okay. We in spiritual life, nobody can solve our problem. We have to discover that because we falsely identify with this body, and because we're primarily looking for sense gratification, yehi sansparsaja bhoga, Krishna's giving us a hint. Yehi sansparsaja bhoga, by the sparsha, by the touch of the senses with the sense objects, by the touch of the soul with material energy, dukkha yonaya, the birth, the yoni of dukkha, the birth of all suffering begins. Dukkha yonaya evate. Adyantavanta kaunte anateshu ramate buddha. Those who are buddha, who have buddhi, intelligence, they understand this very basic philosophical point, and therefore they don't allow themselves to get entangled right from the very beginning. Just like we were discussing this morning, analyzing my difficulties in spiritual life is not a real difficult job. When talking with devotees, every devotee is different, but one characteristic that often comes up is that devotees think that my case is special, you know. I've got special extenuating circumstances, and I just want you to hear about all these special details in my problem. This is why I can't chant 16 rounds, or I can't follow the principles, because more or less the main problem is a weakness somewhere in the foundation. There's a crack in the foundation. We're not chanting nicely, or we're criticizing others, fault finding. We're doing things on the foundational level which create problems later on. So similarly here, the same thing. The original mistake is the most important mistake. When we, Krishna gives a very simple formula. When we used to go to these festivals in 1969, 70, there were a lot of, we called them be-ins or love-ins, where, you know, literally tens of thousands of hippies would come together, and or young people, you can say. Not all of them were hippies. But anyway, they were all had one thing in common. They were against the Vietnam War. So Prabhupada gave us a peace formula, because everybody was, you know, it was a peace festival, and there was a lot of protesting. And so he gave us a pamphlet that we would distribute called the Peace Formula. And it was very, very simple. It was Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati. One can get peace both in one's life and in the world if he just recognizes that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, Krishna is the supreme proprietor, and Krishna is the supreme friend of everyone. Simple. Almost too simple. Isn't there something more complicated I can get into? This is, you know, too simple. I'm a philosophy graduate. I want complicated, you know. But there's a... who was it? I forget his name. Some great American scholar or whatever. He said, true eloquence is something spoken concisely. Does anybody know that? True eloquence is brilliant words spoken concisely. The key is that some of the most brilliant thoughts are not big, long expressions. Some of the most simple statements, some of the most brilliant statements are only one sentence long or one paragraph long. So Krishna is giving this peace formula, and It's brilliant. It's the whole reason why people are fighting and suffering in the material world, because they don't accept the Supreme Lord. And here's an even more simple statement. Prabhupada spoke about it. You listen to Prabhupada's lectures from 1966, really up to 1970, 71. Afterwards also, but during that period, practically every lecture was about the same point. You're not the body. You're not the body. You're not the body. It's something that, you know, we need to hear over and over again. One devotee was telling me today that even though he knows in his heart, theoretically, that he's not the body, but when he goes to his office and he has to speak to his secretary, energy captures him. And he gets into a... His secretary is definitely not Krishna conscious. And, you know, he's an eligible bachelor. And, you know, there's energy there, and he, there's a temptation to forget. So we have to keep hearing the same lesson over and over again. When we finally get out of the bodily conception of life, then our suffering will stop. There is no suffering for the soul. As I've said many times before, it is a contradiction for you to suffer. It's a real shame. Prahlad Maharaj says, para dukkha dukhi. Lord Nrisimhadev, for myself, now that I've realized this philosophy and developed a love for you, I have no suffering at all. And Prahlad Maharaj, of course, proved that. He was able to eat poison and not be affected. He was able to be put into fire and not be burned. He was really a transcendental person. So when he says that he was not affected by material misery or happiness, that he was completely equanimical, we can believe it. But he said, I do suffer when I see that so many people in this world are suffering due to just ignorance. So we have got initially, or a brief understanding of this, we've got an initial grasp of the subject. We've got a theoretical understanding, some more, some less, but it's something that we do talk about fairly often, and we all repeat it. Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not the body. And but we should know that to the degree that we slip back into our old consciousness, to that degree, we're going to experience difficulty. And I think you've heard before that Prabhupada wanted to introduce or reintroduce the principles of Varnashrama Dharma. And he said that Varnashrama Dharma is applicable for devotees to the degree that they're still attached to the material world. So even though we are devotees, more correctly, we are sadhakas. We're not devotees, but we're attempting to become devotees. So Varnashram Dharma can help us. And getting benefit from emphasizing how we're not this body, this can help us. The suffering that we experience, everybody has to appreciate his own condition, his own situation. but you can take it for sure that if you are able to elevate your consciousness, if you're able to come to the level of Krishna consciousness, then yoga bhavati dukkha, all of your material suffering will be mitigated as well as your spiritual difficulties. Krishna consciousness is the spiritual solution for all material problems. A devotee, a pure devotee of Krishna, he has no problems. And what appear to be problems for a pure devotee of Krishna are simply opportunities to grow and to learn more about Krishna consciousness. There's actually a path of Krishna consciousness, through the forest there are different paths. So there's a very distinct path of Krishna consciousness. And when you put yourself firmly on the path of Krishna consciousness, when you make a commitment that I'm going to achieve the fruit of this process, I recognize that the process of Krishna consciousness is the panacea, it's the light switch which turns on all the lights in the house, it's the medicine which cures all diseases, it's the solution to all of our problems, Krishna consciousness. And when we commit to following the path, even we haven't reached the goal perfectly, but being on that path is going to give us so much relief. It will seem like the miseries which we experience now are so insignificant compared to the miseries which we experienced when we were identifying ourselves with the body and mixing with all the other animals in the human form and, you know, engaging in. We will see the difference between night and day. Yes. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagarti samyami yasyam jagarti bhutani sanisha pashyato mune. There is definitely a different way of looking at the world, and there's a different set of experiences and perceptions. So whatever's happening in the material world is caused by prakriti. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvas. It's caused by the modes of material nature. You have nothing to do with it. And you have to come to that realization. The process is chanting Hare Krishna. The process is living a lifestyle which will enhance your experience, your spiritual experiences. The process is associating with devotees who will constantly remind you. Individually, it is unlikely that any of us could be successful. We all need association on every level. No man is an island. No man can be alone, because you'll get attacked by your own mind. You think you're keeping association with no one, but your mind, you're keeping association with your own mind, and your mind will definitely be your own worst enemy. The mind is very expert at cynicism. The mind is very expert at criticism. The mind is very expert at destroying determination. Keep reminding ourselves. And just like that kirtan in Bombay, the process of being on the path of Krishna consciousness, everything is kirtan. That chanting kirtan was very, very sweet. But
for a devotee, everything he does is kirtan, it's sweet. Every moment is becoming sweeter and sweeter because he follows the process. Again, you know, you come back to the same place fairly often and you end up wondering, did I tell this story the last time I was here? But I it's such a nice example of Srila Prabhupada. We went to the house of a big Indian man. We had a program. It was a big house, about 7 or 8 cars. At least 2 of them were Mercedes, maybe 1 BMW. Q ambassadors, Indian cars. Big marble house, marble. It was like a palace of a great king or something, right in the center of Bombay. So many servants. And one of the biggest families in India. So after the program, on the way back to the temple, Prabhupada said to us, he said, whenever I go to the house of a wealthy man, I always pray to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. So we're shocked. Prabhupada, why did he say that? Please don't let me fall down. And then later on when we were discussing it, we realized that the reason Prabhupada will never fall down is because he's always praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. That's why he'll never fall down, because he's always conscious of the power of Maya and he's fixed. So we also have to appreciate the association of devotees, because even if we can't keep ourselves fixed, they will keep us fixed. If we associate with serious devotees. Now, I was talking to another devotee who is feeling some difficulty because by force of circumstance, he's associating with some devotees who are, they're devotees, but they're real, you know, not so serious devotees. They're kanishta. There's different levels of kanishta, madhyam, and uttam. So, you know, there's also kanishta. There's uttam kanishta. I don't know what that would be, but anyway, there's people who just have their own ways and their own ideas, and they don't follow Shruti or Smriti or Purana or Pancharatra or Vidim Vidhi. So what is their devotion? Utpat yaiva kalpate. It's a disturbance. Utpat means it's a disturbance to everyone. People who invent their own idea. So this devotee, because he's forced to associate with them, his own determination is, you know, he's feeling some little distress. They don't inspire him, but so, if we're serious, then and we may have some, it's expected that we have some tinges of our former consciousness there in our heart. It took us millions of years to get to where we are now. It's highly unlikely that we're going to purify our lives in a few months or years even. It's going, I mean, Srila Prabhupada said, and I didn't hear him directly, but many devotees have repeated the same story, older, senior devotees, that Srila Prabhupada said that it took him 32 years to perfect his chanting. So if such an exalted devotee like Srila Prabhupada can say that there was a need for him to improve his chanting, and so much so that it took him 35 years or whatever, how much time it will take us to really chant and feel ecstasy, really chant and hear the name, the Divya Nam, the pure name, rather than the Prakritik, the material name. So put yourself on the path and associate with devotees. Remember that any distress that you go through, it's caused by your attachment. Philosophically, if you can understand this and keep going back to that original understanding, I'm suffering. Why am I suffering? Must be because of some false identification with the body, because the soul doesn't suffer. The soul is eternal. You can't cut the soul with any weapon. You can't burn the soul with fire. You can't wet the soul with water. So how could I be suffering? I'm a spirit soul. So I'm creating my own misery. What a fool I am, you know? There's a mantra that sometimes they chant. And you can chant that too. It's, maybe you've heard it before. Oh, wa, ta, na, sa, yam. You heard that mantra? You can chant that. Oh, wa, ta, sa. How's that go? Oh, what an ass I am. Kids do that sometimes. Our kids do that sometimes because they're into mantras. I was just in the UK and somebody tried to catch me at that. I said, look, buddy, I've been around a long time. I know that. little kid, Gurukul kid tried to get me to chant that. But next time you find yourself suffering, you can chant that mantra. Because it's really stupidity. You're causing yourself all this distress by falsely identifying with the body. And what happens during kirtan, some of the most ecstatic kirtans, you know, where builds up slowly, there's a good singer, good mridanga, good kartal players, and then it gets into high gear, and then it gets into overdrive, and you know, you just let go and you're in ecstasy, and then after about 2 hours, you know, it ends and you just kind of sit down on the floor, and it's almost like you don't feel that you're the body anymore. It's intense. Have you had that experience where you just, you know, it takes you a little while to re-enter the body? because you just, you know, you took a trip outside your mind, as they say. So remember those experiences, and your problems are there. We cause all our own problems. So you know, take responsibility for your own spiritual lives, and take shelter of the holy name, and Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? It's probably not time. Okay. Thank you very much. Again, I want to thank you all for, really making a sweet vibration in this temple room here by coming and chanting together. To me, it's ecstatic to just be with you all. Hare Krishna.
just thought he might ask me.